I'm Jonathan Goldstein, host of Wiretap. Each week you're invited to listen in on my telephone conversations, whether funny, sad, wistful, or even slightly strange. You never know just what you might hear on Wiretap.
I mean, I knew you had a show. I just didn't think that people actually listen to it.
Howard,
that's the breadth of your genius, Jonathan. It's not just that you're funny, but you can be cripplingly, poignantly depressing.
The Wiretap Archives, available on CBC Listen, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Q. If you're not already following us on Apple or Spotify, I heartily recommend that you do so. Not only will you find new episodes when you wake up every morning, we post them before they get on the radio, but also you'll have access to the archive of conversations we've had on the show over the years. So if you're not already subscribed or follow or whatever it's called, please do so at Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. Okay, so here are some of the folks that have won the Grammy for Traditional Pop Vocal Album of the Year. Michael Bublé, James Taylor, Lady Gaga, Paul McCartney, Tony Bennett, and Leve. If Leve's name isn't as familiar to you, Leve is a 25-year-old Icelandic-Chinese singer, songwriter, composer, and performer who took home the Grammy for her latest album, Bewitched, this year. Just take a listen.
You bewitched me from the first time that you kissed me. Waited all night, then we ran down the street in the London light, the world froze around us. You kissed me goodnight. You bewitched.
Here's the interesting thing about Leve. You might expect most artists who make music that's a little bit of the classic era, you know, the classic era vocal jazz, throwback to Billie Holiday or Sarah Vaughan, to have audiences full of people who, I don't know, remember that era of music, or who bought vinyl because they had to buy vinyl, not because it was a choice. When you look out into Leve's crowd, it's all young people, Gen Zers, listening to music that sounds like it could have come out in 1944. But Leve says that's because her lyrics are modern, you know, more Billie Eilish than Billie Holiday. So Leve has re-released her Grammy-winning album with some brand new songs. It's called Bewitched, the Goddess Edition. When she was playing in Toronto for two nights at Massey Hall, we asked if she would come in for a conversation. She said yes. So Leve's been a musician for a long time. She started playing the cello when she was 8. I was curious as to what happens when you're gifted at an instrument like that when you're just a kid. Take a listen.
Gifted. I don't know. I think it did come very naturally to me. I definitely practice less than most people. Definitely, according to my mother and cello teacher, I practice less than most. But I definitely loved it. And my mom could tell I had like a knack for it and, you know, made sure I saw it through and really did my scales and whatnot.
Did you like it?
I loved it.
Did you like classical music?
I loved it. And I loved it more and more as I grew older. I think when I was, you know, I started playing when I was 4. So it was definitely something that was almost like an extra class in school. You know, you come back from school, you've had your math class, you had your English class, you had your Icelandic class in Iceland, and then there's an hour of music. This was just my kind of daily routine. And then as I grew older and older, and as I became a teenager, I really started to appreciate it and love it for what it was, and something that was my own as well.
I hear you. It starts off as a lesson. It starts off as a thing you have to do to sort of satisfy a requirement. But as you get older, you start to appreciate this music for its aesthetic purposes, or, mm-hmm. or you start to actually like it.
I started to like it, I think, when I started playing chamber music. When I started, I went to pre-conservatory. So I was like around other kids who were doing the same. And it became a social thing as well, going to orchestra and meeting all my friends and playing this amazing repertoire that's existed for, you know, centuries. I think that really changed it for me. And then I started singing as well. And I think I just grew a love for music that was really something that came from my own willingness and love rather than something that felt like a task or a class at school.
It's a little different than other people who have musicians as parents. Your mom's a violinist, is
mm-hmm.
that right?
Yeah.
And your grandparents are
professors of classical music as well.
What's their specialty?
My grandfather, who passed a couple of years ago, he was like the head of the string department at the Central Conservatory in Beijing, but he was a violinist. And my grandmother is a piano professor.
And what eras did they specialize in? Were they into the...
Western classical music.
Interesting.
So anything from like the 16, 17, 18, early 1900s.
And did you go to visit them and play music with them or hear them play music?
Every summer I went to China and spent a couple of months there and just practiced and took lessons and really just focused on it. That was my classical music camp.
What do you remember about that?
I remember just a lot of joy. I'd play a lot with my grandparents. Like, we'd play together and we'd sing together. And then we'd like have a big feast afterwards and eat. And then a lot of my grandparents' students would come over and play for us. Or I'd just sit and listen while my grandparents were teaching. So it was just a lot and a lot and a lot of music.
When you say you started singing, what do you mean you started singing? You started singing in professionally?
I always sang, like, as a classical music student, you just always sing, but
Like you were singing opera pieces?
No, never opera. I immediately started singing jazz standards when I was 12 or 13. I don't know why I, like, didn't start singing until then, seriously. But when I was 12 or 13, I started singing, and I immediately just started singing Ella Fitzgerald songs. And because my dad loved Ella Fitzgerald. He loved jazz music, and so he'd play a lot of that in the house.
I try to think that love's not around, but it's uncomfortably near.
I always had like a very low voice, even when I was young, and I immediately resonated with those singers, so I just kind of copied them.
My next question was, did you have that voice that you have now even back then? Because it's a characteristic voice.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I remember when I was 13, when I was doing like singing competitions, and people were always remarking on the fact that I sounded so old. Like, I sounded like a woman at the age of 13 or 12. And which made me feel kind of weird. I remember feeling a little bit like a circus animal. I feel like it's evened out now. But I definitely always had a very specific way or style of singing that definitely felt like it was something from an older time.
The feeling of feeling like a bit of a circus animal seems to come up in your story a lot, and also in your music. I was really struck by the Letter to My 13-Year-Old Self song on the record, and I thought it was a beautiful song.
I know that you feel loud, so different from the crowd of big blue eyes and long blonde hair and boys that stare.
It strikes me that not just because of your voice, maybe you didn't feel like you necessarily fit in.
No, not at all. I mean, Iceland is a very homogenous place. It's beautiful. It's very safe. And I love it so much. But I definitely felt very odd as a kid there, being, you know, half Chinese. And I grew up partially in the States, as you can hear from my accent. So I felt very foreign. And I had an identical twin. I was very expressive. I felt very loud. And I didn't feel very cool. And that definitely is a huge part of my story. And I think Little Levi could have never imagined what would happen. So I wanted to write a song kind of to give her a little hug.
Can I ask you what you might remember about that feeling of not fitting in? I think it's like a really nice story that we kind of... But I actually remember what it actually felt like, which was nights alone, sitting at my parents' computer.
Yeah.
You know, reading stuff online.
It was... I mean, yeah, I read a lot. I read a lot of... I didn't read in Icelandic. I remember I had this big dream of like leaving Iceland because of it. I read so much like Harry Potter and Hunger Games and like a lot of kind of like young, like almost like these fantasy books, almost like as an escape, I think. And then music was my escape as well. But I think it just felt very, I just felt really different.
Yeah.
And it was, the thing is like, I was very open and I had friends, but I just, at the end of the day, it felt like people returned to each other and I left the bubble. You know, like after school, people continued going together to football practice or going to, you know, having play dates after school. And I felt like I completely left that world after I left school. Like I went into my own world where I was playing like Bach. So it definitely felt odd, but it's really made me who I am today.
It tends to do that, hey?
Yeah.
And I remember that. I remember this feeling of like, I remember someone talking to me about Tom Petty one time. You familiar with Tom Petty?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember someone talking to me about Tom Petty one time and they were like, oh yeah, Tom Petty, everyone likes him, but he's nobody's favorite. And I felt like that was my social life in high school.
Yeah. Like that's the thing. I was so open and I had friends.
Yeah.
Like it didn't, but I always felt like people were kind of making fun of me a little bit. Like they always knew I was a little bit different. And younger kids, you know, who don't know any better, you know, would come up to me and be like, where are you from? Like, they'd always ask, where are you from? Because, like, even being half Chinese, I looked so different from the rest of the Icelanders. I remember answering, like, oh, no, I'm Icelandic. And they'd be like, no, but where are you, like, actually from?
Yeah.
Like, and I was like, how did they gather that evidence? Like, it's very funny. And I also didn't, I feel like it didn't allow me to touch with my... It didn't allow me to connect with my Asian side either. Like, I feel like the first time I got to connect with my Asian side was after I moved to the States.
How?
I think there wasn't a community for it in Iceland. There were no other people I could talk about that to. I felt different. I didn't feel like I was, like, Asian necessarily. I just felt different. Whereas, like, now in the States, I get to kind of connect with that part of myself and connect with others who experience that as well.
Do you live in the States now?
I do. I live in Los Angeles.
Because you moved to Boston.
I did,
to go to the Berklee College of Music.
Mm-hmm.
A very prestigious, hard to get into music school. I know some folks. I have a couple of friends who've gone there. You know, it's not the easiest thing to get into there as a musician.
It's definitely a remarkable place. You have, I came from such a strict classical music world.
Well, here's my question. That is not Juilliard.
No,
that is not the New England Conservatory down
exactly.
the street. You're
it's
coming from professors and of violin and mm-hmm. classical violinists and rules.
Exactly.
And you're going to the psychedelic tie-dye shirt of music schools.
Exactly. And I felt so lost because I was so used to rules. Like rules were my whole life. That's how I got by in life. That's how I made sure nothing went wrong, both musically and as a person. And going to Berklee kind of pushed me out of that box, both musically and as a person, which I think was integral to my growth as an artist and the reason I am, you know, the musician that I am today. But it was definitely so scary. I mean, I was playing in jazz comp. I was a cello principal. So I was playing in jazz combos as like a cellist and I was sitting there just like, oh my God, improvise. Definitely very different.
You went to Berklee as a cellist?
Mm-hmm.
I figured you went as a vocalist.
No. Nope.
And even the cellists that go to Berklee don't play your style. They typically
nope.
play that choppy Natalie,
yeah,
Natalie
very
Haas.
Choppy. Exactly.
We're getting nerdy about the cello here, by the way.
Yeah.
Rochetta Eggleston, Natalie Haas, Shukachaka, Berklee cello.
All Berklee people, yeah. That is such a specific topic.
Thank you
such
very much. Thank you very much.
But yeah,
if not the
I
style
mean,
you were playing.
No, I mean, I learned it, which was so good for me. And I had my professor there, Mike Block. He taught both, you know. So it was actually really great, and it really opened me up. And the way that I actually started this whole career was I was posting videos of myself singing jazz standards and accompanying on cello. Which I wouldn't be able to do if I hadn't, like, you know, learned to break out of that box.
Can you hear that pitter-pat and that happy tune is your step?
Life can be so when you do a job like this, you never know what might live in the hidden hallways of your brain that might come in handy, but I never thought that my knowledge of Berklee chopping cello styles would ever come in handy, but there you go. I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. You're listening to, right now, the acclaimed Icelandic singer Leve, who just won the Grammy for Best Traditional Pop Vocal Album. As you just heard her say, it was just a couple of years ago that she was recording jazz covers for Instagram and YouTube and TikTok. I mean, what you're listening to right now, just her voice and cello. So that's where we pick up the conversation, talking about posting songs like this one, her version of The Sunny Side of the Street. I asked her why she was posting stuff online in the first place.
On the sunny side of the street.
Were you hoping to get discovered? Were you hoping to get noticed?
No, it was more of a practice for me, I think. I was just keeping myself accountable to stay inspired and keep practicing and keep keep writing as well. I'd like do a song that I wrote and then a standard and a song that I wrote and a standard, like a flip-flop every day. But the first video I posted, one of the very first ones, was a cover of It Could Happen to You, and I was playing cello and singing. It went viral on Instagram.
What? Tell me what that means. I know what it means, but sorry, I'm not that old.
It's a jazz Instagram, like a big jazz page.
Okay.
Posted it, like reposted it.
Yeah.
And tagged me, and I got like 10,000 followers in 1 week. And then I had a group of people who were listening, and I just kind of kept going because I was like, oh, like they're listening and they're watching, I may as well.
So why do I think Valentine is the linchpin here? Why do I think Valentine is the one that got...
I mean, I didn't start TikTok until a couple of months later. Valentine was probably one of the bigger TikTok moments. That was like one of the bigger, the first viral TikTok moments, if you will.
I've rejected affection for years and years. Now I have it, and damn it, it's kind of weird.
And how did that feel to have that song kind of blow up?
I mean, I wrote a verse of that on Valentine's Day almost as a joke. So, I mean, it was really cool. I definitely, the song resembles an old standard in every way. Like, especially when I wrote it, it had nothing but that kind of vibe to it.
I want to listen to some of your album, which I really love. Take a listen to this.
Don't you notice how I get quiet when there's no one else around? Me and you and awkward silence. Don't you dare look at me that way. I don't need reminders of how you don't feel the same.
From a Grammy-winning album, Bewitched, that is Levy with From the Start. Tell me about that song.
From the Start, it's just a silly song I wrote. It's like a bossa nova Brazilian-style song that I wrote in like 20 minutes almost as a joke. I thought it was kind of cheeky to write a song about being in love with someone who's in love with someone else. And I think we all kind of know that feeling of hearing someone that you kind of have a crush on express their, you know, love for someone else. It's like this very sinking feeling. And I've never really heard a song about it. So, yeah, that was kind of it. And I wanted to record it in a very... I wanted to record it in the same way that a song, a bossa nova song in like the 60s or the 70s would have been recorded. In that, you know, there's no virtual instrument or any like modern help in that sense. I wanted every instrument to be played by a person.
Why?
Because real musicians deserve a chance to play. And it's so much more fun.
Yeah.
It sounds good. It sounds better. And the question is always like, how do I, instead of slapping a lo-fi filter on something to make it sound old or a vinyl crackle, how about we use the vintage mics? You know, how about we use the techniques and rely on that instead?
Do you want your music to sound old?
Old? No, timeless, yeah.
What's the difference?
Old sounds like something from the past. Timeless is something that can stretch from the past to the future.
That's very much how I felt when I... Sorry, I didn't mean to grill you there.
Oh my God. Grill away. I've gone through years of conservatory training. I'm very
sorry,
used to the grill.
I don't want you to feel like you're in the conservatory right
now.
Oh,
yeah. No, my God. That. It's so okay. Fine. I'm
okay.
Used to it.
Okay, cool. Because the reason I ask those questions is because I find your music so interesting as someone who comes from older music myself. So I came up playing a lot of like old traditional Irish music.
Cool.
And a lot of old traditional Newfoundland music where I'm from, and a lot of traditional and old country music and bluegrass music. And then as I have sort of kept one foot in those scenes, I find that when people make music that is reminiscent of an era, oftentimes their references or the things they write about are sort of stuck in that era too. So you'll have people you'll have people who are on TikTok or people who have Netflix writing songs about like, oh, you're the bee in my bonnet, or, you know.
Yeah, I'm very, 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 very careful to not go into that world, because at the end of the day, I don't think I'm born in the wrong century at all. I want to live in the future, like as a woman, like there's no other century I'd rather live in. I'm very much a modern girl. I like my modern comforts. But I love music of the past. But, you know, I like to say it's modern stories. Like, this is my modern experience. It's maybe, you know, I reference older music, but it can get, I don't know if gimmicky is the right word, but it can get, you know, I don't want it to sound like I'm replicating something old. I just want to be inspired by it.
I don't want to feel like I'm replicating something old. I want to, like, you like the heart or the...
Got to take the good parts from it, you know?
The chord progressions.
The chord progressions, the recording techniques, the sounds, the melodies, the... Even the lyrical style, you know, my writing style is, like, the lyrical style is very reminiscent of, like, you know, I'm very inspired by, like, Cole Porter and George and Ira Gershwin and Irving Berlin. Like, this era of lyrical writing, I think, is so clever. I just use words that are more, I use the vocabulary I actually use in daily talk instead of borrowing something from the 40s, because that's not authentic.
And is that intentional on your part?
I think it's just subconscious. It's just I write the way I talk.
Yeah, it's rarer than people listening to this might think, for people to write in older, like, you know.
Yeah, I remember the first time I wrote a song kind of in like a standard style. I realized that nobody really does it nowadays, unless it's like for like a throwback TV show or something like that. But there's no reason that people shouldn't listen to it. People are writing in like more of styles of like the 90s or the 70s, the 80s. Like, those styles are all coming back. Why not throw it back a little bit further?
It's more of my conversation with Leve coming up. But first, let's listen to some of this music. This is a song called California and Me.
Should I figured that you'd go back to New York? Don't consider me when you run back to her. You don't have to hide it. I know why you went. Said you needed space. I know better than that.
That's Leve in a song called California and Me. Coming up, more of my conversation with Leve. You're going to hear us talk a little bit about a mantle that's been placed on her. Bringing jazz to Gen Z, responsible for introducing jazz to Gen Z. Does she really feel that way? Is that a fair thing to put on an artist? Is that just more of a reflection of perhaps a generational insecurity with their music? We talk about that coming up on Q.
Driving down Sunset's a terrible sight.
Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science where ever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q.
You took a star to bed, woke up with me instead. You must have felt so down, deceived.
You're in the middle of my conversation with the Grammy-winning jazz and pop singer Leve, who has just released the deluxe version of her album Bewitched, called Bewitched, the Goddess Edition. Here's something I've noticed. When someone gets a lot of attention for singing older music the way that Leve has, or like playing older music, and listen, that might be old country music or classical music or older jazz, they get this extra responsibility put on them by people who write about that genre. You don't just see like, oh, these people write good songs or they're good singers. You see stuff like, this is the artist responsible for bringing this great old style to the next generation. It's on them. And responsible is an interesting word there, right? Like when Vogue wrote about Leve, their headline was, Leve is the viral Icelandic prodigy bringing jazz to Gen Z. Is that a lot to carry? Does Leve see it that way? Can't she just make music? I had to ask her about that. Here's the rest of my conversation with Leve. How do you feel about the way people talk about your music, that you bring jazz to Gen Z? Is that comfortable for you?
I mean, it's really hard to box me in as an artist.
Yeah.
Like, it's very hard to put my entire catalog into one genre, because I have some songs and I have recordings of jazz standards as well that I, you know, really try to keep authentic as well. So those would definitely, I would say, fall under jazz. And but then I have songs that are inspired by jazz, and I, you know, take a chord progression that is very jazzy, if you will, but have more like modern lyrics or melody or production over it. So it's so hard to put it into one thing or another.
Yeah.
I would definitely hope that I act as some sort of gateway for young people to listen to jazz. I use my platform to talk about my favorite current and past jazz artists. I get lots of comments and messages from people saying that they started listening to Chet Baker or Miles Davis because they found it through my playlists, or my music kind of gave them that pathway to get there. And that's what I hope to do.
But that's just you communicating music that you love. That's yeah. just music. Like the distinction of like Leve brings jazz to Gen Z, this is just my opinion. I just see this a lot. I see this a lot when younger artists sing older music, that there's a generation that wants to make them into like the Kids Are All Right. Mm-hmm. The Kids Are All Right, and she's going to take us, she's going to take this classic timeless music and bring it into the next generation. As she's going to be some ambassador of the music that we love. But my feeling with your music is just, it's just really good. It's really good. And you know what I mean? But like, do you understand what I mean? Like, it's really good, and you really like it, and you really like the style. It doesn't feel mm-hmm. like you're some sort of like flag bearer for the petticoat.
No, I mean, I definitely feel a duty just because I love this music so much, and I see how it feels. It alienates certain groups, especially classical music, really alienates certain groups. And I really want to remind Gen Z, especially, that it is something that is entirely theirs to listen to and entirely theirs to love, and they don't have to understand every intricate bit of it to enjoy the music. I think that's something I definitely think about. But other than that, I'm just making the music that feels most authentic to me.
And your audience is full of people who are your age. And it's,
yeah,
it's a
and I
thing,
don't
man.
Think
yeah.
they're walking in there thinking that they're, you know, keeping a part of some sort of movement to keep a genre alive. I think they're just hopefully coming there for the community and enjoying the music and relating in some way.
I remember that feeling. I remember like when my band was touring, we kept on being called like, oh, these are the people. I come from this island in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, and we have our own kind of style of music that very few people play. And it was like, oh, they're preserving the music for another generation. And I used to always say to people like, no, I'm not. I'm just, I like it.
Right.
I like it. So I'm playing it because I like it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, I'm both, right? I'm like, I don't think too much about it because it's just the music that comes most naturally to me
yeah.
and what I've done my whole life. But then I do also, I like when I play concerts with orchestras, for example, I stand there and I look out into my very young audience, and many of them are in a symphony hall for the first time in their life. And maybe they'll go next week and listen to a Beethoven symphony and discover a new type of music that they didn't know that they could love. And that's definitely something I think about and love. I mean, I'm playing Lollapalooza in Chicago this summer, and I'm playing with the Chicago Phil. And that's the first time an orchestra is playing at Lollapalooza. And that to me does feel kind of cool. Not even in some kind of like, you know, I'm an ambassador of you know, classical music or the orchestra in any way. Just it's something new, and it's a sonic world that maybe Lollapalooza goers haven't gotten to discover and understand as something that is their own yet.
I hear it on your record too. I hear that there's not a lot of reverb on your voice.
No, I hate reverb. I have one song with reverb.
Why do you hate? Talk to me about hating reverb.
I don't hate reverb. That's the wrong way of putting it. I don't like how my voice sounds with reverb, aside from on my song Goddess. Then I wanted reverb because I wanted it to sound very cavernous. I wanted it to sound like I was in a big hall. I just like the very intimate sound of the dry voice.
I
like sounding like I'm inside someone's ear.
It is a more challenging thing as a singer to not be able to rely on that. echoiness.
Yeah, I guess that's a part of it is me challenging myself to see how far I can go without the traditional helpers, you know? But I love that sound. I love that dry tone. I love feeling, I want people to put on a pair of headphones and feel like I'm in the room with them.
Where do you want your music to go from here?
It's a great question. My one hope is that I don't let any kind of outside force stop me. Like, I kind of have just been letting my mind run wild in the past few years, and it's not held me back in any way. So I just hope that I can continue to kind of be inspired by my own thought rather than what's coming from the outside.
Rather than expectations of an audience.
Expectations of an audience.
Fame or money.
Or fame or money or team members or anything like that. I really hope that, not that anyone's pushing me, but I really hope that I just listen to my own intuition.
We're going to play, at the end of this interview, we're going to play From the Start, because I really love that song.
Thank you.
I put on your record, and I spend a lot of time listening to old music, and it's so refreshing to hear someone sing old music, but not in an old way, in a modern, normal, contemporary way. I really love it.
And thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Don't you notice how I get quiet when there's no one else around? Me and you and awkward silence. Don't you dare look at me that way. I don't need reminders of how you don't feel the same. Oh, the burning pain. Listening to you harp on about some new soulmate. She's so perfect, blah, blah, blah. Oh, how I wish.
I hope you dug that conversation with Leve. And if you're not as familiar with her music, I hope you dig that too. From her album Bewitched, The Goddess Edition, that's Leve. Before that, you heard my conversation with the Grammy-winning jazz and pop singer. All right, that's it for us. The other conversation we have up today is about this really thoughtful, strange, beautiful film called Evil Does Not Exist by the Japanese director Ryusuke Hamaguchi. He talks a little bit about making this film where the music kind of came first, the score kind of came first before the film did. Go check it out wherever you get this podcast. We'll see you soon. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.